My name is Don Rudrud, and I'm a parish pastor. I speak about what I speak about now out of a love of Christ and the church. I've given a good bit of my life so far to try to struggle with how to be relevant to the gospel to people of the inner city, of people of other cultures. I'm currently a pastor in Minneapolis, but I was raised in Southern California, and I've always had the advantage of being close to communities that have all kinds of different people in them. And that's sort of where I got the theme for tonight, which is out of the melting pot into pluralism. By the time we're done, I hope you at least know what I mean by that. Even if you don't understand everything else I'm saying, I drew a picture on the board which shows the melting pot, and we'll see if I can explain it a little bit. You haven't all been with me for the other sessions, so I want to review very quickly some things we've already covered. We've talked about a coming new Lutheran church that is now voted in all of its constituent bodies to move towards union. That church faces some dilemmas. The most major dilemma it faces is that it will be known as the most white denomination of any American Christian denomination. There is no other church body that is more lily white than the Lutherans are. Now, that isn't true of all Lutherans. Missouri Synod is way ahead of us. Missouri Synod has done quite well in reaching out to people of other ethnic minorities. But the Swedes, the Germans, and the Norwegians and the Danes of my tradition have been fairly poor at it. One of the statistics that shocks me is to know that as of today, only 7 out of every 1,000 members of our church are people of color. Only 7 out of every 1,000. Because of this dilemma, I've used the word intentionally because it's the word of the great Swedish student of American culture and race, Gunnar Myrdal, who talked about the white man's problem. Because of this great dilemma that we are in, I am struggling with how we might deal with that in a new Lutheran church and might be more inclusive. And the word inclusive is on the board as an important basic kind of ground rule word that we've been using here in our discussions. To be inclusive is to be a church that welcomes diversity, welcomes different lifestyles, welcomes people who talk in different ways about their faith, does not require that everybody be the same. That's where I get my melting pot idea. The melting pot idea was that somehow if all Americans could sort of just be together and rub shoulders enough, we'd all kind of come out the same. Now that worked pretty well when most of us in the Lutheran tradition were European. We really could melt the Germans and the Danes together and the Norwegians, and we did that with mergers that have already happened. But we're in a different ballgame now. It's a different age. You can't easily melt together all American people when now we know that... Let's give a few facts. See if I can read my notes. We now know that we live in such a pluralistic society that there are over 120 identified ethnic groups in America. Of these 120 ethnic groups in America, there are over 100 languages and dialects spoken in our country. That means that a third of all American people today come from one of these ethnic language group peoples, or for want of a simpler term, are people of color. One third of all Americans. Those of you from California are very aware of this in terms of the fact of the tremendous immigration of people coming from Mexico and South America, from Korea. You know probably better than I that by the year 2000, half of all of the people in the state of California will be foreign-born. Half of all of the people in the state of California will be foreign-born. We have a mission field on our doorstep. God has given us the world to relate to, and we must begin to learn from the so-called foreign missionaries how you do it. How you relate to people that aren't going to melt together and all be alike. They won't even all speak our language. We'll have to deal with that one right away, is the question of how we can be pluralistic enough to communicate with people in different languages. I've put another word on the board, and that's indigenous, and we want to get to that one too. How can we have a church that's planted in the community, in the people, among the culture of a people that are now living in our communities? Some of you have been people who have moved from a certain neighborhood because your neighborhood has changed and you've been concerned about different people that have come that aren't like you, that don't do things the same way you do. But the church still needs to be there in that community among those people, even if you leave. And more often than not, more recently, the churches have not moved, but the churches have tried to stay in the inner cities, in the areas of racial transition, and trying to minister to the people in an indigenous way there among the people. Let me read something from the Second Vatican Council of the Roman Catholic Church. It is the essential Catholicity of the Church, the universal nature of the Church, must be, by its very nature, the Church incarnated and growing in every culture without doing violence to that culture. I drew my melting pot because I have an image of what it might be like really to be in a melting pot, and that's pretty violent. To be melted down and boiled together is not a pleasant image. What the Catholic teaching of the Vatican Council is teaching us all is that the Church universal, the Church throughout the world that we are part of, all that name the name of Christ, will be, could I use the word incarnated? That's a biblical word, incarnated in the people. It will be found in the people and in their art and in their culture and in their music all over the world. And it is our task, I think, as Lutherans, to discover that, to find the Church in the cultures of the people, and if we are to be part of those who bring the gospel message, to bring it in ways that can be understood in the cultures of the peoples of the world. That is what I mean by being truly inclusive. Let me put a little diagram on the board about culture that has been very helpful to me, and it's so simple that I'm surprised that somehow I didn't see it before I saw it this summer. There is a culture that I am a part of, it happens to be Scandinavian Lutheran, that we'll call Culture A. And there is a culture in my neighborhood that is very different than my culture. It might be Italian Catholic, it might be Hispanic, it might be Black, but we'll call that Culture B. Now, when I am attempting to build a Christian congregation, to call people to the worship of Jesus Christ and to the proclamation of the word, there's some tricky things that go on because I bring my culture and cultural tradition into that relationship. But what about this other culture? What is going to happen? The option that we have too often taken is the melting pot option, which in effect says that the strongest ingredient, the stronger culture, the culture that has the most people and the most power and the most wealth dominates, and the other culture is basically eliminated. And if they want to be part of that church, they better be Culture A. This is what happens when you have a congregation of 2,000 white people and 3 Black people. They better well be Culture A. Now, there's another option that people see that that's not good. We don't want to do that. We don't want to do violence to having people change. And so this is a very idealistic option that says, well, when we're forming a Christian congregation, this should be way above culture. It shouldn't have all of these kind of strings attached. So we're going to ask these people to kind of deny who they are and not affirm all of the stuff about Lutefisk and Lefse and St. Olaf College and Norwegian sweaters. And we're going to ask these people not to wear their costume or talk their language, but we're going to try to create some kind of a congregation here that is no culture at all. It's sort of new, you know. I come from California, and I believe that this has been an attempt in California more than once to try to create some new thing that is truly Californian, that has sort of nothing to do with any of these cultures. It's just all new. I don't think that works either. I'm going to talk more and more about the question of pluralism. And what is pluralism? I mean, the way I'm defining it is that there seems to be another option, and that is that there can be my culture that's Culture A, and there can be Culture B and C and D, and we can create a Christian community that has within it both cultures A and cultures B, and we'll say it's okay. We'll affirm it. We'll celebrate it. We'll have Lutefisk this potluck or this meal, and next time we'll have egg rolls. We'll have some readings in the scriptures, of the scriptures in the Hmong language or in the Vietnamese language, and we'll have some readings in English. We'll allow people to be proud of who they are. We'll allow people to affirm who they are. And that can be done within a congregation. Often it doesn't work real well to do it in one worshiping group, but it may be in a congregation. There is a congregation that worships at 9 o'clock and a congregation that worships at 11 o'clock, but they're both part of the same church. Or as it's being done now at the Temple Church in Los Angeles, There are four or five cultures of people that have their own worshiping chapel, and they worship for about a half hour, and then they all come together at a great celebration of ethnic culture, and maybe they have communion or they have a time of prayer when they're all together. It's like Pentecost. They're all speaking the languages of the world. But somehow they're saying it's okay to be who you are, and you can continue to be part of the Christian community in a pluralistic way. Am I losing any of you yet, or are you with me? This is not easy, but it's an ideal that many are working for, that we not ask everybody to sort of boil down to be the same. Will we really allow the possibility, even affirm the gift that someone else can give us from their culture, that we are going to be richer when we have the opportunity to learn how other people understand the Christian faith, read the Bible, worship, do their art, sing their music. We'll be richer for it. It'll be a more exciting church to be a part of when this kind of thing can happen. I think I said the other day that they are already planning a huge celebration that will mark the beginning of the New Lutheran Church in 1988. And at that time, they will have a pluralistic celebration. They will have people of all of the cultures that represented in America, and all the cultures that are represented in the Lutheran faith, sharing something of their music and art and beauty with everyone. Okay. The New Lutheran Church has also set a goal. And we've talked about that last time. The goal is, I'm using the word goal instead of the word quota, because I think the word quota turns a lot of people off. It turns me off. I don't want to just talk about quota. I want to talk about a goal of including people in a new church, a mission goal that we would have that within the first 10 years of the life of this new church, there will be 10% of us as people of color, or our primary language is not English. 10%. Right now, we're at approximately 0.8%. We're not even at 1% at this point. Right now, 99% of all of our clergy are white people in the Lutheran Church. The goal would be that we would find ways to intentionally move towards involving people of color in our worshiping life, in our Lutheran congregation, so that by the year 1999 or 98, 10 years from now, we would have 10% of people of color. There is some sign that we're moving in that direction. Dr. Warren Soderberg, the head of Ethnic Ministries, the American Lutheran Church, writes in this month's Lutheran Standard, dated September 5th, that minority membership in the ALC has increased during this past year from 0.6 to 0.8%. That's a little bit of increase.
25%?
Yeah. The Hispanic membership during that same period of time, Hispanic membership has increased 42.8%. Now that's understandable because the Hispanic population is growing at tremendous leaps and bounds in this country. And we only recently have become really intentional about ministering to those folks. And it's also understandable to know that even though it increased 42.8%, it was such a small number that that percentage meant that it almost doubled the number of Hispanics that we have in the Lutheran Church. Now they constitute 0.01% of all ALC membership. There's some other reasons why we seem to be moving a little bit in the direction of being more inclusive, and that is during the 1960s and the tremendous turmoil in America, there was a tremendous emphasis on the part of our church bodies and our colleges to intentionally recruit students of other color. I am embarrassed to say that when I was in college, there was only one black student in my college, no American Indian. I don't remember anyone of Asian extraction unless they were from a foreign country. And I know that in that year, in the year 1961 or so, the Lutheran Student Association did a survey of all Lutheran colleges in America. How many people of color were attending all Lutheran colleges in America? The result was that there were very few, probably less than 100. And yet, in 1984, just 2 years ago, we had, as a result of very intentional scholarships and very intentional recruiting and working in black communities to encourage students to come to our Lutheran colleges, we had in 1984 2,247 black students alone attending Lutheran colleges in America. Of those, one college in particular, Uppsala College, had 26.5% of its student body black, and they only have a student body of 1,046. So that is a quite large percentage of their student body is black. So there's been some progress towards this goal of being inclusive. Here is the mandate given to the new Lutheran Church. I quote from the documents of the merger. To call forth, equip, certify, set apart, and supervise and support an ordained pastoral ministry and such other forms of ministry that will enable this church to fulfill its mission. If our mission is to be more inclusive, if our mission is to proclaim the gospel to people of all cultures and backgrounds, if our ministry and mission is to be the body of Christ that includes people of all races, then indeed we need people to help us do that. And that's the big question. Who will help lead us to do this? Will it be guys like Don Rudrud, raised in suburban L.A., go to St. Olaf College at New Luther Seminary, where I had no teacher who was of another race. I had no teacher in seminary who was a woman. And I had limited experience until age 25 with any other culture at all. Will it be me that will lead you into this new church and what it's meant to be? I don't know. I think there's got to be more than people like me that talk about this. I think it has to be concretely indigenous leaders. The word indigenous. Do you know what does that mean to you, indigenous? I'll let you talk a little bit here. Indigenous.
It's native to the area.
Native to the area. Okay. You know, that word is a word that foreign missionaries use all the time. They understand what that means. You know, they want to see an indigenous church in Africa. In fact, it's sort of humiliating to notice that once the white missionaries started to go home from Africa, the church in Africa is thriving. Right now, there's no church in the world growing more than the church in Africa. The center of the Christian world during my lifetime will shift to south of the equator. I mean, when the white missionaries got out of the way, they had done preparation work, they had developed seminaries, they had gotten the gospel planted, but the black church has now taken over the leadership and it's thriving. Now, why can't we learn that in America? To plant the church in such a way in ethnic minority communities so that the church thrives with local indigenous leadership. I think we've got good Lutheran precedent for it. Let's talk about our earliest roots. Any of you ever heard the name of Muhlenberg? The first organizer of the first Lutheran synod in this country. You know, as Lutherans came to this country, they came from Europe, many times fleeing difficult economic situations. They were refugees. They were fleeing stuff that's just as rough as those Mexicans are fleeing down in Mexico coming up here. But as the Lutherans came to this country, their first desire was to have pastoral leadership, and so where did they look? They looked to Europe. They'd send back to Europe to get their pastors. But that became more and more difficult and even impossible at the time of the Revolutionary War. And it became clear that as these German people were going to be seeking their own religion in this country, if they didn't have Lutheran leadership, they were going to start to look to the other very dominant religious movements in America, especially the Great Awakening that was coming through and the influence of the Methodists and the Episcopalians and the Quakers and others. And so people like Muhlenberg said, we have got to home grow our own leadership. We've got to develop our own pastors. And so he and others developed a system of theological education, which I still think is valid. It was centered in the congregation. It was centered in the community. And this is very biblical. A person that came out of a congregation who had a special gift for speaking, a person that seemed to relate well to people who loved the Lord and knew the Bible, was encouraged to study that more. But there was no seminary to go to, so who do you study it with? Your local pastor. Muhlenberg would sit in his study and study the Bible with these people, and they'd talk about the faith, and they'd talk about the Lutheran confessions. And then once in a while they'd get some more together that were interested, and they created a little theological seminary of two or three people in the parish. Now, when that man, and it was always men in those days, completed his training, and a training was only about 2 years in length, it was clear then that he was prepared to lead his own congregation. And that freed Muhlenberg or another pastor to move on to help get started another training program. The people then got their own member as their leader. They called him to be their pastor from their midst. They knew him well. They knew his gifts and skills. And it was very local and centered in their indigenous community. They were Germans, and they had a German leader, and they loved them. And it worked. The church was planted, as Muhlenberg said, in America because of this system of theological training that trained not only pastors, but also influenced the laity of making the local church a school where people could learn. But as years went by, you all know that there was also some pressure to start colleges or schools. Many attempts were made by Lutherans that didn't work. We struck out on a few, but then we began to form some colleges. Colleges like Gettysburg College and Muhlenberg College and the college, what's it called, in Selinsgrom, Pennsylvania. Anyway, there were several colleges that began to be formed. One of the early Lutherans, by the name of Benjamin Kurtz, was especially convinced that this system of training lay people to be preachers was the way the church could avoid one of the great troubles of Lutheranism in Europe that he saw. He had been trained in Europe and had seen the problem of a very orthodox, very rigid Lutheranism that came out of the period of scholastic kind of emphasis of the academic Lutheran pastor in Europe. He said, we need evangelistic schools that train people of piety that don't necessarily have a bunch of degrees after the name, but know how to talk about the faith. People that are kind of close to the people. And so he started his so-called mission seminaries, our mission seminary that was part of the American Lutheran movement, a movement within Lutheranism that eventually didn't really prevail, but did have a great influence in its time. He started a small school in the same manner that I've been telling you about, training small groups of people. They were taught to use the Bible, taught to talk about their faith, and they became kind of lay preachers. They helped to plant the church throughout the state of Pennsylvania and then on into Ohio and so on. Now, in my own tradition, the exact same thing was happening among the Norwegians. Any of you ever heard of the names of Clausen or Eilsen? Clausen and Eilsen, the first two Norwegian Lutheran ministers ordained in America, were both laymen that never went to theological seminary. They were part of that whole movement that came out of Hans Nielsen Hauge in Norway, of the reaction against state church, the desire to have an articulate layperson who could speak their faith and to be missionaries in this country among their own people, indigenous Norwegian people, and these learned their Bible, learned how to be pastors, and then were recognized as such and ordained as such. And they eventually ordained others. And many who they ordained never went to a theological seminary, but studied with them as kind of a tutor. Now, I want to pause a little bit and say, I think we better learn from that. Because as the Lutheran Church was planted in this country by that style of leadership, we might be able to do a similar thing among people that come as new immigrants to this land from other countries, or people that do not have a college degree, or people who do not understand the educational system like we do in our college and seminary training that we have developed so carefully. I at least want you to remember that and tuck it in your mind when we come back to it in a few minutes. Well, we did devise colleges eventually, and almost every college of the Lutheran persuasion in America was also a theological school intended over a period of 7 or 8 years to develop pastors. They usually had heavy emphasis on the teaching of Greek and Latin. They were very heavy in the classical learning, and then they, in the seminary level, certainly emphasized the Lutheran confessions. They went back to Martin Luther in this, for Martin Luther taught that the key to what we have to contribute as people of the gospel in Lutheran tradition is a solid education, evangelically based in the Word of God, that will help people to be good church people and also good citizens of the community. And that strong emphasis of Luther on education has been carried on to this day. We have some of the finest colleges and even seminaries in the United States in the Lutheran tradition. We need not apologize for them. I'm very proud of the schools that I went to and happy to continue to affirm them. But when we developed such a good and solid system, we also saw that the system of seminary and college became somewhat rigid, somewhat doctrinaire, somewhat limiting, and certainly not inclusive. Not inclusive of people that were real different than us. I want to say a little bit about the fact that why I think it did work and why it didn't work. It worked among the people of European extraction because they had come out of a system of education and theological training in Europe that was sort of transplanted and put into the American theological school or the American college. It made sense to them. It was part of our roots. Even though I fully didn't know all of the tradition of Norwegian theological education, I sure resonated with what I learned then in seminary when I began to find out what was happening back in Norway. It was sort of part of my roots and part of my culture. But when you try to bring someone from another culture, let's say a black person from Alabama, into a theological system and a college system which was centered in a European understanding, and who reads primarily theologians who have either been trained in Europe, as most of my teachers were, or read books from Europe, as many of my books were, translated from German theologians, you have a very cultural clashing problem. And I don't know if I said that correctly. Okay. Basically, I think I don't have to argue too hard to convince you that our Lutheran seminaries in America have tended to be culturally biased. They've been biased on behalf of the majority group, which is white and middle class. I saw this even among the students I went to seminary with. Very few of them ever talked to me about their fathers being bricklayers or carpenters. I heard very few ever talk about living in poverty. But what I typically found at the seminary was students that came out of the middle class or upper middle class background. Many of them had parents who could easily afford to send them through 4 years of college and 4 years of seminary and pay the bill. We have tended to bring into our leadership now not necessarily the person from the local church who's recognized as someone who has the gifts of the Spirit and can lead in ministry, but we've tended to bring in our seminary those who have got money. It's been a money system, and it's becoming more so. I don't know if you realize how much it costs to go to a theological seminary today, but it's a lot different than even when I went, and it continues to possibly go up as we get more sophisticated in how we do it. What about somebody from another culture? And I've drawn this sort of symbolically here by different colored dots. I didn't have red and yellow, black and white to use. But what if I happen to be a low-income Hispanic person who felt the call to ministry, and I lived in San Antonio, Texas, and I loved my local church, and the pastor encouraged me in my faith, and I got to do a little lay preaching, and I taught confirmation. And finally, I came to the pastor one day and says, "Pastor, I feel a call to ministry. I need to go to the seminary. Where should I go to seminary?" Now, let's remember that if I am Hispanic, I most probably got married early. And if I come out of a Hispanic cultural tradition, I believe in large families. And so I have lots of kids. And not only do I have lots of kids, I probably don't have a real good job. So let's say I'm barely keeping the family together as it is. And I want to go to the seminary. What am I going to do? Well, miraculously, a few of these folks actually did make it up to St. Paul, Minnesota, or some other place like that, to go to seminary. But what they were asked to do once they brought their little family so many miles away from home into the snow country was to kind of leave their culture behind, to sort of deny the fact of the siesta and the fiesta, and deny the taco and the frijole, and to sort of deny all that had made them who they are, and to kind of relate for 4 years primarily to white faces and to white theology. And it didn't always work. Some made it for a few months. Some made it for 2 years. I know a few that made it to graduation from seminary and never made it as parish pastors. They had been bleached white. They had lost their cultural root. They had lost their ability to relate. And more than that, they had not been given the gift of doing theology from within their own culture. And that's a tremendous gift. If you can struggle with the Bible and the issues of scripture and tradition, and also struggle with the issues your people face in unemployment and poverty and suffering, you have a tremendous gift to your ministry. But if you cannot, you are sort of asked to sort of mark time until you might get back to wherever you're going to be. Now, this is a very real example I've given you, because this year I've had a Puerto Rican young man from South Florida working with me as I've been his mentor or teacher. And believe me, I struggle all the time with, is this right? Am I the right one to help this man? I mean, it's not like Muhlenberg anymore. You know, I'm not working with a man from my own culture. And not only that, he's working in a parish that has not one single Hispanic member. And he's supposed to be learning about ministry here. I mean, it's a tough struggle. I feel for it. And frankly, once in a while, I suggest to him that I think he's really got to get back to his own people. And maybe he's got to even consider going to a different kind of theology training so that he could be closer to his people. I think we have been culturally biased. We can't help it. Our theological professors that basically went to school with all white people and went to seminary with all white people and studied primarily European and American white authors cannot feel for what it means to be black. They cannot really empathize for a church situation of an Asian community. They may not speak the language of the Hispanic, and so we have problems in the system. And I have not used that flag word, racism, but I think I dare use it. It's still real. Racism is very real. The students of other cultures still tell us that when they go to our Lutheran colleges or when they go to our Lutheran seminaries, they feel racist attitudes from the other students and from the very system they're a part of. Well, we call that sometimes institutional racism. Institutional racism, the way we structure the very educational programs or the way we structure our community or the way we structure our relationship excludes people or doesn't allow people to share in the power. And it's very hard for a seminary to, for example, develop a whole curriculum about black theology when they may only have two black students. And so we tend to be structured for white theology. You know, and there is a white theology, folks. There really is. There's a way that white people read the story. It's their own music, their own art. And how can the saving presence of Christ be affirmed in their culture, too, and not just in mine? That's the hard question I'm struggling with. And frankly, I'm spending 3 months to struggle with it. And I've talked a lot right now, so I'm just going to pause and ask you, do you ever struggle with that? Or does this make sense to you as I'm outlining it? Or maybe you disagree with me, but I just want to pause and rest. Yeah?
Do you feel that Lutheranism as such has kept the liturgies and theologies more like the European rather than Americanizing it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we expect to get these people who are still in another culture to go to this more formal European thing. Instead of asking them to, you know, accept this, do you think that perhaps in our seminaries we've got to relax the program there and become more Americanized instead of Europe, like yeah. European?
Possibly.
In fact,
yeah.
We had a young man to go from our church in San Bernardino, and after 1 year he came back and he said,
I think one of the problems that's wrong is we're asking people to travel too far away from their own local area to go to seminary. I wish you didn't have to travel from San Bernardino to go and study in a theological seminary.
Is teaching the word of Christ and the theology of the church. Shouldn't it be similar?
Well, it should be in terms of the Word of God, but the question of indigenous, or the question of the culture of the people, or the question of the mission situation where you're at in San Bernardino is very different.
Black. This was a Caucasian boy.
Yeah.
Grew up in the church.
Sure, but it's still a different mission situation. I've had the advantage of living both in California and in Minnesota, and believe me, it took me 2-3 years to even adjust to living in that part of the country. There was such a different living situation. More or less, the ideas I was hearing, which were very new than and very different than what I'd heard. I'm concerned about the fact that we have not developed centers of studying theology and doing the work that are closer to where the church is. That was the original thing that I think Muhlenberg had that was a great gift. There is a seminary in California now in Berkeley, and that has not been around too many years. That's the first really attempt to start to develop theological education, at least in the state of California. But there is no theological seminary of our tradition in the state of Texas. There is none in the state of Florida. There's none in Arizona. There's none in Southern California. And I'm concerned about that. If we are going to be a church that ministers to the kind of country we live in, that's where at least half of our people are living in America. That's the area of growth in America. That's where the people are going. And I would like to see, you know, if you start having theology studied there, I think the worship forms will also reflect the culture that's there. I mean, it's pretty hard in San Antonio, Texas, among Hispanics, to keep using that green book every week. I think it's gonna break loose, you know. But believe me, where they're making decisions about how we worship and the books that we print and Augsburg Publishing House and so on, they are very, very tied to Europe and the system there. Lutheranism has another problem, and that is that we have tried to keep some kind of unity in our worship form, and I kind of respect that. I'm happy to be a part of a church that I can travel from Minnesota here and worship in the same service as I do in Minnesota. There's something good about that, too, so I don't want to all say that that's bad. Yeah.
Don, are you sure it's the mission of the Lutheran Church to include people of color into trying to include them into itself. For instance, in our town, we had a group of blacks, Christian people, and we attended one of their concerts. Well, it was so loud it would put sure. to shame the rock and roll boys, you know?
Sure.
And they loved it.
Yeah.
Now those people, I don't think, would be very comfortable in your present day Lutheran church.
Yeah.
Isn't it a possibility that the Lutheran church would say, well, yeah, here's a mission we'd like to help. Can't we furnish some money to those people to develop their own seminary, their own church, and worship the way they like rather than the staid Scandinavian Lutheran type of church?
Well, I empathize with a lot of what you're saying, and I think that's one way to go. I doubt very much if we're going to be giving money to black churches to develop their seminaries. I mentioned the other day that there are only three black seminaries in America that are even accredited by the American Theological Association. Only three. You know, we've got more than that in the American Lutheran Church. There's something very wrong about how black education has been supported for that particular group. There is no group among Hispanics of a theological seminary nature that's been certified as an accredited school. So we have to work a lot about that. But let me press you a little bit to say, yes, that may be true for your own congregation in your town, but what if you're in my town and the neighborhood around my church has become all black? Does the Lutheran church then automatically sell a building and close down? Or isn't there a way that the Lutheran church could continue the emphasis of the Lutheran Reformation on the Word of God and the sacraments and Christian education and have it for all black people, even led by a black pastor, and still have the name Lutheran on it in that community? I mean, that's another way that the church integrates. It doesn't just integrate by having one congregation include people of all different cultures, but it might be that we really affirm the fact that there can be an all-black congregation and call Lutheran.
That's what we started.
Excuse me?
I come to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Missouri, yeah, they've done that in San Jose. Only a mile from where we used to live before we moved, there's a Vietnamese pastor in the Missouri in the Missouri parish, and of course a lot of Vietnamese people.
Yeah.
And they have a service in their own language, 1 hour, and English speaking.
Yeah.
In another hour, And I don't know that it can be amalgamated. I don't even know that it should be amalgamated.
I think we are culturally enriched as white people to have an occasional opportunity to listen to soul music sung by the black people or to hear black preaching. There's a unique style of black preaching that is very different than what you're ever going to hear from a white preacher, or unless they've spent a lot of time in black churches. It will be very centered on the desire for liberation. It will be very biblical, very centered in the Bible story. It will tend not to be theological. It won't have much of a concept of the ecumenical worldwide church, but believe me, it will communicate. Or I shared with some of you at Vespers the richness of the American Indian tradition, a little bit that I've been privileged to learn from other Indian Christians, or more recently now from Southeast Asian refugees. I feel my Christian life is enriched greatly by knowing Christians of other cultures and traditions. So I hope we don't continue to keep so separated that we don't even have contact. But we don't all have to do it in the name of Lutheranism either. I can get to know that black Baptist pastor in the neighborhood and relate to that black Baptist church, and we can worship once in a while together. And that's a good and nice thing that you could all do. Just suggest it to your pastor that you have an exchange once in a while of pulpits, or do a choir celebration together or something like that. But we do have another issue, and that is, what about those places that seem to be asking for leadership from people of color in the Lutheran tradition? You know, we do have, I've quoted it now, we do have this 0.8% of our membership already that are Lutherans of other cultures, and some of them want somebody from their own culture to lead them. What are we going to do about that if we don't have them in the seminaries? Now, I'm going to give you a few hopes, a few signs of what's maybe going to be coming in the future. One hope is that our theological seminaries have all now been developing in the last 10 years multicultural emphasis in their faculty and in their teaching. They're all trying to get at least somebody of color to come occasionally to teach on their faculty. And a couple of the seminaries, Well, I'll mention them. Gettysburg in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and the Mount Airy Seminary in Philadelphia both have a distinguished black professor on their faculty. And my own seminary, Lutheran St. Paul, has an American Indian Episcopal priest who is now on the faculty. These people are beginning to bring an awareness of cultural things that are different to our seminary students, our white seminary students, basically, because they don't attract large numbers just because they're there. We're also giving our seminary students opportunities to have experiences in other cultures. I heard the other day about a young woman in the seminary who was given an opportunity to live for a month on an Indian reservation with Indian people. At Luther Seminary, the students this past year, some of them went to South America. I know a young man who spent his year as an intern in Japan. The Lutheran Church in America has a synod that is in the Caribbean area, and they have now sent students from their seminaries to Puerto Rico to do their internship in Puerto Rico. This is enriching our leadership of the church to have some experience in another cultural background. Then there is a program that has been developed now for about 10 years called ARTOS. It stands for Alternate Routes Toward Ordained Service. It was started because of the demands of the people in California for some people of Hispanic background to lead them. Some people in San Antonio and Texas said, we must have someone that can speak Spanish to help us in this ministry. And so, after a lot of negotiations and discussions, it was agreed that Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa, would sponsor a program to put a professor from their faculty in Austin, Texas, relating to the Presbyterian Seminary there, and they would begin to train pastors in the Austin, Texas area, like Muhlenberg did. They would take gifted lay people that were already committed Christians in the area that said they were Lutheran and offer them the chance to study theology while they kept working in their job and supporting their family. And these people maybe didn't even have a college degree, so they were real flexible. They would accept, for example, 5 years of being a church president in your local congregation as the equivalent of some college. They would accept the fact that you were a lay preacher in your local congregation as one of the prerequisites for studying theology. And then they would tutor them. Now the program has gone very slow, and it's been very difficult to recruit students for it. And the American Lutheran Church has put some money into that program. As of now, we've graduated 20 students from the program, and it began back in 1973. Of those 20 students, only 9 of them are Hispanic. Only 9 are from the culture of the people. But remember now, these people come to us out of a strong Roman Catholic tradition, and Lutheranism is very foreign to them. They've come to us in churches that usually have not been speaking Spanish. They've come to us as very different people. But 9 of them now have come into the ministry and are been ordained by this alternate route and are serving, in fact, churches, most of them in the state of Texas, a few in Florida. The ARTOS program will most likely be continued in the new Lutheran Church. Some see it as our only sign of real hope that we can somehow raise up people in the local community and train them there. The way it works is that this theological professor helps to teach. They take some courses at the Presbyterian Seminary, and then local pastors take them as sort of students under their wing, and they work with the local pastor in the Spanish language for pay while they're studying, so they get some way to support their family. And they do it as long as it takes. If it takes them 5, 6, 7 years to complete seminary, they'll do it in that time. There's no requirement that it get done real fast. Now that ARTOS program is one model that we should look at. There's another program developed now in Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico is part of the United States, as you probably know, even though not a state. Puerto Rico has developed its own seminary. And they have been convinced there that to really be effective as Lutherans in Puerto Rico, they must teach in the Spanish language and begin to study the South American theologians and not just the European theologians. They've worked hard at developing this little Lutheran seminary, which is going, and now some American white students are also going there to study, and they are producing pastors for a struggling Puerto Rican Lutheran church. The Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago has developed a Hispanic program also, similar to the one down in Texas. In a similar way, people do most of their work in a local parish and not in a seminary classroom. It's all done in Spanish. They do very few courses in the seminary, but the seminary is there, and the resources of the library are there. That's a great advantage of these programs that are somehow tied to a seminary campus. A man named Al Perot, I'm not sure of his first name, but Perot, a black theologian, is on the faculty there, and He has a dream in the new Lutheran church that in Chicago there will be developed, related to the Lutheran School of Theology there, a cultural identity and Lutheran heritage center, which will develop a full-blown curriculum of people of color studies. It will be the primary place of study in the new Lutheran church. I think he's real close to being right, because with the headquarters of the new church moving to Chicago, I don't think Minneapolis, Minnesota will be where it's at anymore in terms of training people of color for leadership in the church. The tremendous cultural diversity of Chicago, that's a logical place for a major center to be. Right now, the Mount Airy Seminary in Philadelphia has about 12 black students and about 5 or 6 Hispanic students. They're beginning to deal with the fact that their neighborhoods in Chicago, in Philadelphia, are predominantly black, and they're linked up with something called the Philadelphia Parish, which brings their students into a lot of contact with many black churches that have still determined to be Lutheran. In California, the Pacific Lutheran Seminary has also developed a program of ARTOS. They have ordained now at least their first pastor, an ALC man, a lay leader by the name of Sam Hernandez. He did a lot of his study while he was working in the Fresno, California area, working as a lay person in the church. He is giving tremendous gifts to that whole part of the church, and what they hope to do there is to recruit small groups of Hispanic studies in towns like San Jose and Fresno and Los Angeles and throughout the Southern California area, where people will gather with small groups to study theology. Another example, the Native American Theological Association, an ecumenical group. You may have heard about it or will hear about it tomorrow, because we have a chance to give to this in our offering tomorrow night, is an attempt to bring Indian Christian leaders together with white Christian leaders to dialogue about the faith and to develop standards for training American Indian leaders on the reservation in places like Mobridge, South Dakota, and places like up in Alaska, where we need to be training Alaskan Indian leadership. Decentralized training again, affirming the Indian culture and the Indian lifestyle. And this NATO organization, which has an office in Minneapolis, is the advocate for these Indian people. It's the one who stands strong for them. And Luther Seminary in St. Paul now has graduated a couple of American Indian students. The United Theological Seminary in St. Paul has graduated 12 or 15 American Indian students. And right now, today, as I speak to you, there are over 70 American Indian students in America in theological seminary studying for ministry, and through the Cook Training School in Tempe, Arizona. It's a correspondence kind of school, not just correspondence, it's small groups also meeting in extensional theological education. They have some 500 students, many of them American Indian. These are signs of hope that theology is being done in a way that is not expensive, that it's close to the people, it's centered in the local church, and the leadership these people are providing in the local church. Basically, what I'm talking about, I'll put the little clue words for it, is T-E-E, theological education by extension. It's what's making the church come alive all over the world. It's the main way that theology is being taught throughout the world, not in big schools, but in small groups. In small groups that study the Bible with local pastors, that bring the resources out of a local community that's indigenous to the local area, that affirms everyone's culture where they are, and raises up leaderships that is known within the local community. I'm excited about what that might mean, that we could have many centers. I see the New Lutheran Church in my dream as having a center of theology truly in South Florida, having one in Southern California, maybe another one in Texas. Bringing
Hawaii.
What?
Hawaii.
Hawaii, yes, surely. By the way, just to give an example of what bad shape we're in Hawaii, I have a friend who was a pastor in Hawaii. He's white. I said, "How many Hawaiians do you have in the Lutheran Church in Hawaii?" He says, "One? My wife. He married an Hawaiian." We've been working in Hawaii a lot of years, folks.
Yeah.
But not one Hawaiian, a part of our Lutheran tradition there. There's another, we're going to have to end soon, but there's another real exciting thing that's so new that you're the first ones to hear about it publicly, I think, and that is something that I found in my research and talking with Dr. Walter Wietzke, who's the head of theological education for the ALC, and that is that in Atlanta, Georgia, there is an ecumenical interdenominational theological center for black clergy. It trains currently 1/3 of all of the clergy of the black tradition in America. It's sponsored by the Methodist, by the Baptist, by the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and by the Congregational Methodist, I believe. It's a whole group of churches anyway. This is one of the three theological centers in America that is fully accredited by the American Theological Association, and we are making a decision as of 1987, next year probably, to put money into that school to provide one Lutheran professor on the faculty of that black school. What that will mean is that professor will be there to tell people about Lutheranism, to provide short courses for white pastors and other black pastors who want to come to that school and learn in that context of that rich theological tradition of Atlanta, Georgia, to be recruiting, and hopefully maybe in 5-10 years to see the fruits of some black clergy coming out of that program being called into the Lutheran ministry. It could be that it will be a great gift to us. It could be a great risk too. I want to conclude. I didn't get through all my notes, but I want to conclude by saying that a lot of these developments that I've been telling you about, to me, are signs of hope that we really could be more inclusive. We could affirm the cultures of different people. We could develop a ministry that isn't all trained in the same place. One of my goals, and I happen to be on a committee representing the American Lutheran Church with the faculty at Luther Seminary, and I say to them, and I'll say to them again more than ever, that I don't want to see that seminary get any stronger. It's right now the largest Lutheran seminary in America. It has 700 students. I think it's way too large. What I want to see happen, and what I continue to believe will happen, is that in the new Lutheran Church, we will become more regional. We will affirm the ministry needs of local groups. We will let Southern California develop its concerns for Hispanic ministry or Asian ministry, if that is their primary concern, and develop the worship materials and resource materials in that region that they need. And we will see a multicolored, colorful church develop that we've never seen before. I think we can reach the goal of 10%, not only of our members, but of our leaders by 10 years being people of color. The new division, or the new Lutheran Church, will have a division of multicolored, colorful ministry, which will include professional staff of each of the major racial groups to help push us towards this goal. And in that, I think there's some sign of hope. Pluralism is here to stay. We're not all going to melt together. And as a matter of fact, I think life gets much more exciting when we can have all kinds of different tastes and sounds and wonders to experience in the Christian faith. You got 4 or 5 minutes here. What do you want to say? I apologize if I kind of did give you the whole load, but when you've been studying this long on this stuff, I had to get it out. So maybe you haven't heard some of this before. Maybe you heard it all. I'd appreciate some feedback either now or privately, because what I need to know as I continue my study is this kind of information that more in the church need to know? Is there a way that we can get this information out to more people?
The success of the Bethel series kind of points to that possibility.
Yeah.
Sell and we'll get together and they'll put themselves for 2-3 years.
Yeah. That reminds me of what I didn't say, and that is, in my talk to you tonight, I've talked so much about clergy, and I didn't want to do that. I really want to say that I think the hope of the future of the church is lay training and leadership. I mean, as Schuller is absolutely right in requiring all of his new members to take the Bethel series. I mean, to have people biblically literate, to know the Bible is absolutely key. But let's face it, the Bethel series is not communicated well to Hispanics. It's not communicated well to blacks. In fact, all of the pictures have Norwegian-looking people in them. Yeah. We've got to do the series different, but that's the idea. Lay people studying the scripture in communities. And I think we can take some of those 25, 30, 40 seminary faculty that sit up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and get them decentralized out and get them working with local areas so that we can develop these kind of Bible teaching programs.
The Bethel series ought to be rewritten.
I think it should, yeah. Yeah, and probably not just pictures, but we have to let people of color help to write it too, so that they can put their understandings in it. Because they do read the Bible differently than white people do. They really do. They see whole different stories. It's a delightful book in the bookstore. I highly recommend you at least look at it, by Robert McCaffrey Brown. And it's a whole business about how people of south of the border, south of this country, read the Bible. I forget what it's called, but it's something like In Many Languages or In Many Cultures or something. But it's just look for the book by Robert McCaffrey Brown, and it's been very moving to me. Any other comments? Yeah.
I hate to talk so much, but I imagine most of you are in Norwegian communities.
No.
I'm from San Bernardino, and 20 years ago we had 4 thriving Lutheran churches there. Today we have 1 thrive. Ours is thrive. I mean, it's good, but it hasn't grown. But what we have, we've lost people, but we've gained from the other 3 churches. One is now closing, the other 2 are faltering. Does that say something about the Lutheran program itself?
Let me just.
Our town has grown.
Let me just, off the top of my head, respond on a prejudice I have about, but I can say it as a Californian. I think what the Lutheran Church in California has done, as I've seen, is basically tried to minister to Midwesterners that moved out from the Midwest. And they did real good as long as people kept moving. But when they stopped moving and started moving out of California, then the Lutheran Church had trouble. Because we are pretty good at nurturing and taking care of our own, but we're not very good at evangelism. And we don't know a lot about how to reach out and talk about our faith. And I don't know what happened ethnically in your neighborhood, but if you have people of different culture move in, and you didn't, as a Lutheran church, take the ministry seriously to those folks, then obviously those churches aren't going to make it, because the white group gets smaller and smaller. Now, I don't know if that hits on the nose or not, but I...
So many of them are going to other churches.
The people of other culture.
Other Protestant churches.
Yeah, sure. And they... Part of the reason they're going to other churches is because we haven't given the gift that we've got to give as Lutherans. I think we've got a great gift to give to our cities. We have a gift of a rich tradition in theology and music and worship and scripture. I think the Bethel series has proven to be good for all denominations because it's so soundly biblical. It's centered in the Bible. You know, that's a gift we've got to give. And one of the impoverishments of many of the churches of color is that they have had to have clergy that are working to support themselves. Many of them do not have very good educations. They have not had a sense of the whole church, but tended to be pretty much centered in their own particular group. All of these impoverish their traditions. We've got a whole sense of the larger church to share. So, you know, if I were in San Bernardino today, I'd say, give me one of those buildings that's almost empty of people if it's still there, and let's start over again. You know, there's still work to be done. There's a mission to do there. Lutherans are not just cultural organizations for Scandinavians or Germans. That's not what we are. You know, we are the missionary arm of the body of Christ. We are the ones to tell the good news. And
what happens when people like the rest of you here, there will be some who cannot keep up with the liturgy, they leave during the service. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will come a couple of times, but they can't hack it. Are we too formal?
Well,
should we Americanize more?
Well, you have to answer that for yourself. I don't know.
And this would come from the seminarist itself.
It could be, but I think we still, in the Lutheran tradition, control a lot of what goes on in the church in our local congregation. No one in the national church tells you have to use that green book. We voted to do it in our congregation. We voted to buy it. But in our congregation, we also developed our own worship resource, and we use many different ways of worshiping. And one of our services every Sunday, we never look at that green book. And you can do the same. Tell your pastor you think that's the way you should go. Talk to other people about that. I don't think seminaries determine that. I really don't. And some pastors need to be educated about what communicates. They've been in their own white theological mindset for a long time, and they need to be shook up. What helped me is to have a few confrontations from some black people and some people of color that talked to me about some of these things. That was a gift to me. I'm thankful for those folks. Well, gotta go to church, so carry on. Yeah, I think you will use it tonight.